welcome, welcome. Welcome, welcome. This is the Russell Price Morning Show. My name is Russell Price. I'm the publisher of Be There Magazine. It's documentary podcast, Pulling Your Eyelids Open. We want to thank our special sponsor, Tori's Restaurant, 700 D Street. He has the best soul food breakfast all day. Stop by Tori's Restaurant, 700 B Street, and ask for John Goodwin. You won't be disappointed. On our newsmaker line, a special guest, Candy, Miss Williams. She is phenomenal. Welcome, 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 Candy. Tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are.
Well, Russell, thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm looking forward to having a very special conversation with you. My name is LaJuan Prince Williams. They call me Candy. As long as I can remember as a child, I was known as Candy. I never really know my real name, LaJuan, until I got in school. My aunt named me Candy when I was born because she said I looked like a little peppermint. But I was born and raised in D.C., went to D.C. public schools. I went to Chamberlain Vocational High School, graduated in 1974. I grew up in the Capitol Hill neighborhood, three blocks from the United States Capitol. That was special to us because we got to identify and see a lot of the events around the Capitol that other people didn't see. The street I grew up on was Lexington Place Northeast. It was a little short street, but it was very powerful because we were a community of people. We learned as young ages how to give, how to help older people, and how to just be a community of young people on the street. And we had people to teach us these morals and values as coming up. I was raised with my grandparents, Ralph and Pauline Prince. I always give God to them because they gave me all my blessings. When I finished high school, well, let me just tell you a little bit about myself. I always danced. I don't know any other form of expression that I had coming up. I just know I like to dance and sing. And as coming up, we had and we called ourselves the Supremes, and we performed in all types of talent shows as children and preteens. And we won all our talent shows all the time. And everybody wanted to be with us. They wanted to come and sing with us because we won all the time. But the most important thing I'm trying to say is that we were focused, we were disciplined, and we put the work in to be a better people. We just had to work hard at what we did. In 1974, I was voted best dancer in D.C. I was approached by my Chamberlain Vocational High School principal. They wanted me to represent them in this all-mega high school of dancers. So I said, okay. And all I can remember, I was 17, a little skinny kid. All I can remember is just going in my basement after work and just practicing. My sister just had me working hard, me and my partner, because we were sure we were going to win this event. And I worked and danced and worked and danced. And lo and behold, at the old Washington Coliseum, I went there, and we were competing at the time against people who were doing the robot. That was the dance of the 1974, and I didn't know how to do the robot, but I did know how to do the bump. So we did a lot of choreographed routines and we used bump as our main dance. And lo and behold, God bless me with winning that affair. That event, I did win, and I was so happy. But I say that because I did put the work in to make it happen for me. And that was that was my first life lesson I learned in dance, that if you put the work in, it teaches you discipline, it gave me confidence, and it gave me self-esteem. I was on various television programs at the time, and I won a trip to the Bahamas. And it kind of put that little school of mine, Chamberlain Vocational High School, on the map in 1974. So I say that all I can remember in those early years is just I just love to dance.
How did you come about with the D.C. Hand Dancing Club?
Okay, well, let me just clarify a few things with you, Russell. It's DMV Dance Club. What happened was, let me just go back a little ways. I moved down to Waldorf in 2018, and I was looking to go out and do some, you know, dancing, and there was not. Nothing in Waldorf. They just didn't have hand dancing down there. They didn't have too many dancing at all that I could see. So I said, well, you know what? You know, I like to dance. And I had newly divorced from my husband and moved down there by myself. And I said, okay, what am I going to do to give back? I'm retired. I retired from the federal government in 2014. I want to give back. So I started the DMV Dance Club just with the mission of giving back to my senior community, doing maybe one or two dance socials a year. And I wanted to develop an intimate space where people can come and dance and be entertained by comedians, pianists, any type of entertainment I could come up with, and just socialize. But I wanted to do it on a smaller scale, maybe 50 or 75 plus people. I didn't want to do the big 200, 250 people because I wanted intimate space. So, and I got that concept from Hugh Hefner. He had a show, I looked at his biography, called The Penthouse. And all I can remember, these people was dancing, they was drinking, you had comedians, you had James Brown on there. And I'm like, I like this concept. So I started this club, and it's a private club with just my family and friends. Well, you know in business, sometimes you go in one direction, before you know it, you're in another direction. So as I began to market the DMV Dance Club, everybody was asking me, what about hand dancing classes? And I kept saying, well, you know, I'm not in the hand dancing classes. I'm just trying to develop a club where people can come and socialize and entertain. But I just kept hearing these hand dancing classes. So I said, well, you know, Lord, I think maybe I need to go in that direction. So lo and behold, I began to market my first event under the DMV Dance Club, which were hand dancing classes. I got instructed. He told me, he said, down in Waldorf, these people don't know about hand dancing. They don't like it, or they just, it's just not a market for it. I don't know. I just moved there. Lo and behold, Russell, the first class was a complete sellout. It was 50-plus people. My phone was jumping off the hook. I had couples that wanted to come in and learn how to hand dance. I had single men and single women. It was a success. The second session, more people came. I mean, they was running in the door. Before I could get them to sign the sign-up sheet, they was like, I'm going on the floor. So it was a pure success. However, pandemic hit us.
Russell? Go ahead.
Russell?
Go ahead. We lost you. Go ahead.
Okay. Technical difficulties. I'm sorry about that. I'm on my iPad. Maybe I just need to use my phone.
Go ahead.
Where was that? About the
you were talking about you were talking about Waldorf and about how nobody knew about the hand dancing, and you got that started. So continue from there.
Okay, thank you. The first two hand dancing classes was a full success. We had over 50 people show up. They were really excited about the hand dancing. So there was a market in Waldorf for hand dancing. And after that, unfortunately, COVID hit, so we had to shut down. So that was my first event under the DMV Dance Club.
That's fantastic. So that was a very much success. And Waldorf is a wide open area for hand dancing. And people do hand dance. You found a niche, and the COVID sort of knocked that out a little bit. Tell us about what you have in store for the future for the DMV Hand Dancing Organization.
Well, first of all, DMV Dance Club represents a consortium of a lot of promoters in this area that we like to collaborate with each other to produce quality events. What hand dancing is to me and what I've learned through hand dancing is that it forms a bond with you and your hand dancing partner, whoever that may be, or just a person you go out and dance with. I think it's connection, it's trust, it's feeling, it's touch. Because hand dancing, you should be hand dancing as one. And I think a lot of people like the hand dancing classes and want to learn how to hand dance because it connects you with other people. The DMV Dance Club also services seniors. It services seniors in various ways. First of all, we do offer dance socials. We also offer exercise and wellness classes. And coming up, just speaking on this, coming up tomorrow will be my first event under one of my partners, will be an exercise class for the seniors in my active adult community building. And then Sunday, we'll be starting hand dancing classes here under my active adult community for seniors. This all falls under wellness exercise for seniors. I also want to take these programs out to other senior communities to get the seniors up, running, exercising, to keep them in shape. So that's one of the things that DMV Dance Club is doing now, and I got two events coming up this week. Hopefully it will continue, so we're just going to see how that works out. But there's a lot of excitement and buzz about it so far. So I'm glad to be a partner with another one of my partners in this endeavor. DMV Dance Club, like I say, we also sponsor events. We help promoters sponsor the events by providing support. Maybe it could be financial support or sponsorship. So that's something else. That's the way that I give back to the senior community. One other product line that I want to explore is financial services to the seniors. I am an accountant. I got my degree in accounting from UDC and provide those financial services to seniors. It's a small part of my product line, but I really want to expand that, especially during tax season. Also, in my business plan for 2022, I want to produce a children's dance video. What I would do with that video is take that video out to all of the children's boys and girls club, all the youth centers, and let these kids know that what dancing was to me and dancing can be to you is to give you the confidence, give you the self-esteem, and give you discipline that if you work hard enough for anything, to win a dance contest, to bring the dance contests back to the youth, it gives them power. And that's what hand dancing is for me. And that's what I wanted to give to the younger generation. So one of those videos, and I'm going to collaborate that with other partners. That's something that I want to do to give back to the younger community.
Well, I want to thank you first off for being one of our sponsors. It's a pleasure and an honor to have you sponsor the Be There Magazine Living Legacy Awards Gala. We've been doing this for over 45 years, and you came along and decided that you would be one of the sponsors, and I want to thank you for that. Also, I want to thank you for your initiative and your fortitude to start the organization, to be a contribute to the hand dance community. The hand dance community is large in Be There Magazine's endeavors, but also in the DMV period. People love that particular form of dancing, and you are doing a fantastic job keeping it alive, and now you're talking about bringing hand dancing to the youth competition. There was a big competition years ago when they used to have the hand dancing competitions years ago at the Marriott with Magic 102.3, and they don't do that anymore. But the hand dancing competitions was huge at one time in this area. But you are looking to bring it back for the youth, and I want to commend you on that. When it comes to your future, where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
That's a good question, Russell. You know, I want to support I have a daughter who was also a dancer. She was accepted at Duke Ellington School of Dance. And I have a granddaughter who is very much in the ballerina arena. She's one of the top ballerinas in Washington, D.C., according to her ballerina instructor, but she is good. I really, in 5 years, I really want to support my granddaughter in moving her into that ballerina arena because that's what she loves to do. That's my number one goal, is supporting my granddaughter. My number two goal is continuing to provide quality content to our senior community and furthering community activities with our seniors. One thing I can say that we do all this for our community, but we have to give back through our nonprofits. And there are three nonprofits that are really dear to me. And the first nonprofit is Beautiful Balance, and that nonprofit spearheads entrepreneurship for children. It's headed by my sister and my niece, and they do a lot of work with entrepreneurship for children. The next one is Fit Fathers, which is a wellness nonprofit for fathers and sons. I say that's dear to me because my kid's father is not here. He passed when they were young, but my son did have a close relationship with him, so that's kind of dear to me. And then the other one is Christmas in July. Christmas is July. In July is a nonprofit that provides bicycles to at-risk youth and to youth who can't afford bicycles, but he doesn't in July. So I will be providing bicycles and supporting those nonprofits also. And I think that whether I continue with the DMV Dance Club in the future, I know I will be continuing with those initiatives, if nothing else. But I will be continuing to dance. That will not be stopped at all. Thank you.
Excellent. Tell me about the most three influential people in your life and how they impacted you. Tell me about the three most influential people in your life and how they impacted you.
Well, it has to be my grandparents, Ralph and Pauline Prince. They raised me. They instilled in me certain values. My grandfather always instilled in education, hard work, and spiritual growth. That's what my grandparents gave me, first of all. I worked hard to get where I was after 36 years in the federal government and district, 12 years in the district government, who got me started, and the rest of the years in federal. I was a hard worker, and I'm so proud to say my daughter has developed those same skills as being a hard worker. The next person I will have to say is my sister, Paulette. She was the one that grilled me in the basement for 2 months and I won that dance contest. But she always told me that I could do everything if I put my mind to it. She supports me in everything I do. And I support her also because we were both raised by our grandparents. And these are the things that she instilled in me. And I guess the third most person important in my life, and it's been a lot through my work experience and through my personal experience, I guess it would be my children, and Tisha Jones and Dwayne Jones. Those are the two people that I worked hard for, to give them a better life and to give them a better. So proud of both of them. However, you know, children make mistakes, but like I say, you have to my most motivated force to do a true blessing and to be, you know, not by by those three people that I pointed to.
What is the biggest myth about hand dancing you would like to debunk?
Can you repeat that, Russell?
What is the biggest myth about hand dancing that you would like to debunk?
Well, you know, let me say, I was married for 20 years, so I really didn't get out in hand dancing because I kind of got out of the arena when I got married. I just focused on my marriage. But when I got back out in the hand dancing arena, I find that what I don't like, and this is me, I don't like the cliquish attitude sometimes that is displayed in a lot of these venues that I go to. And believe me, I haven't been out there in a long time. But I do think there is a clique. I don't like that. And I think it's because in D.C., we grew up hand dancing by watching. I watched my sister and her boyfriend hand dance, and I went to the banister at the house, and then I started hand dancing. And before you know it, you know, everybody in the neighborhood was hand dancing. But we never went to school. I don't know about what the hand dancing structure is, because I never had a class. I would learn once I look at this class how these other people were taught. So it's difficult for me, and I'm just speaking on myself, to dance with somebody who was taught to hand dance, as opposed to somebody like myself, we just learned from the street. It is a different style. It is. You can identify the people who went to school and the people who, like myself, learned on the street. It is a different style. But I do think in D.C., in our community, it is cliquish. And people will tell you about me. I'm not cliquish. I don't like that word. I don't like it. But if we can just all open up, that's why we have to develop a consortium of promoters and bring everybody together. I think people are getting more comfortable now with each other. But it's just that I grew up in Northeast. I know people who hand dance. They grew up in Southeast. They grew up in Northwest. Just a whole different genre. But if we all can come together and just not be so cliquish, I think that might be, you know, that might make it a little better for me anyway.
You said something so profound. When I came to this town in 1972 and they started talking about hand dancing, it was people who were from D.C., born and raised in D.C. They talked about this culture of hand dancing that was ingrained and embedded in them from birth. They talked about how you learned to hand dance, like you said, from watching somebody dancing with a doorknob, your mother or somebody gave you the insight to dance. When the hand dancing class came about, and I'll never forget it because I was there in the very beginning of the conception of the hand dance class, the original hand dancers said that was impossible to do. You cannot teach someone in a class how to hand dance. It had to be something that was ingrained in being from D.C. But when Brad started the classes, he proved them wrong. As the classes kept graduating and graduating, more people were dancing like Brad's classes. And now if you look at the dance of today, the oldies, was called Oldies Inc., whatever, years ago, those people are still here, but they're not the main people who are driving the hand dancing movement as far as the style of dancing. Do you agree with that?
Yes. And I have to commend Brad for that because he developed a model that would, how we can transfer hand dancing from one generation to another. And that was the most important thing, I think, in the hand dancing classes, is having to transfer that particular style of dance from one generation to another. And the hand dancing classes are so popular because it creates a connection between the two dancers. When we were coming up, it wasn't uncommon for two women to hand dance together because it was just a connection. And two men in my hand dancing. It wasn't uncommon for us to see that in the little parties we used to have in the city, D.C. But what Brad did was astronomical, and it was groundbreaking to transfer that knowledge and that style from one generation to another. And we needed that in order to keep hand dancing alive.
So excellent said, it was a phenomenal aspect of what he did and how he did it. But you are doing such great work yourself today. You are doing something that is more needed. You're supporting other people and you're supporting other venues. You're supporting the Be There magazine, Living Legacy Oscars, and the Living Legacy Awards Banquet Gala on February 24th. It's going to be a pleasure to have you there. You have a table. You have people who want to be sitting with you. They admire you. They just talk about things that you do and what you do, and your name is becoming a synonymous in the hand dance community. What's your biggest failure, and what did you learn from that experience?
Good question, Russell. I need to think about that. You know, I don't like to say failure, but I guess when I was coming up, I did lack a lot of confidence and I lacked a lot of self-esteem. So a lot of things I wanted to do when I was coming up, I didn't do it because I didn't have the confidence enough to do it. Dancing was what gave me the confidence to do certain things. So if I could say failure, just mean that I did miss out on a lot of opportunities coming up when I was younger in my, you know, my younger days, because I just didn't have the confidence and the self-esteem to do it. But dancing allowed me to break that cycle and for me to come out of that and be successful in everything that I did.
Excellent. If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, what would that be?
My 18-year-old. Okay, 18 years old, out of high school. That's a good question, Russell. I have to think about that for a while. But my 18-year-old self, you know, I would say that I wish I would have continued. I wanted to be a dancer in Las Vegas, and I wanted to go to school for dance. But, of course, you know, not having the financial support and financial support to do that, I wish I would have continued on to go to school for dance professionally because I wanted to be a Las Vegas showgirl dancer.
That's interesting. That's a serious job to be a showgirl in Las Vegas. You had to really be, number one, in tip-top shape, and number two, you had to have a look that was phenomenal for the stage. So that was a dream of yours. You had to be at 18 years old. You had to be something of what they call statue of looker. You was a looker. You talked about being 20 years.
Yeah, I must admit. Well, they say I was anyway, but yeah, I wanted to do that.
Well, you had to be a looker. But you talked about being married for 20 years. Most people don't last 7 years or 3 years. Tell me, how did you meet your spouse?
Say that again.
you talked about being married for 20 years. A lot of people don't be married for 5 years or 2 years. There's no longevity in marriage. Tell me, how did you meet your spouse?
Would you believe I met him at the bus stop? Stop that I would go to when I was working on Capitol Hill. I met him at the bus stop, and we began to talk, and we just began to bond. And I think at that time when I met him, I got married. I didn't get married young. I got married when I was 38. So I had already been through a couple of bad relationships. But when I met him, I think we both was in the same place. We were, you know, we were tired, and we just wanted to really settle down, and I really wanted to, you know, begin to grow with him. And we did that. We were successful. We had three houses. And unfortunately, he passed in 2018. But it was a 20-year marriage. And but, you know, we just bond, you know, at first. And we just known each other for 6 months. So you really didn't have to know nobody that long to marry. You just had you just needed that mindset. And like you say, we known each other 6 months, and we went to Vegas and got married, and we were together for 20 years.
That is excellent. So it's true that you can meet someone, be in the same mindset, go get married without really checking all the boxes. You just go get married. But after you be married, it's proven to be a solid love connection, and you stay married for 20 years. So that's commendable. You knew what you wanted, and he knew what he wanted, and he did it basically because he loved you and you loved him. So that was excellent love story. What was your favorite trip you've ever taken?
I've been to Vegas 3 times. I love going to Vegas. Vegas is one of my favorite places. But, you know, I went to a trip with my husband called the Greenbrier in West Virginia.
Oh,
that was
God.
The woo! That was the most. That was the most beautifulest place I've ever seen. The mountains of West Virginia is just gorgeous. And we stayed at the Greenbrier, and unfortunately, we were the only black couple there.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you, Candy, you just brought back a memory of memories of memories. The Greenbrier was one of my favorite getaways, hideaways. Like you say, the average black person didn't know anything about the Greenbrier. So if you met someone that you really cared about, or you wanted to have a good rendezvous, a good getaway, you went to the that was the place that I went several times. And like you said, you may have been the only black there. But when you're there, it's not about being it's ambiance of the place, the mountains, the green by the restaurant, the time. Oh, my God. I don't even know if that still exists. But you just brought back a memory of something that I had totally forgotten about, and I used to wear that out, man. I used to love the Greenbrier. I mean, it was one of the best places to go to have a good time, and it was years ago. What is your favorite color, and what do you say, what does that say about you? What's your favorite color, and what does it say about you?
Well, my birthday is February. I'm an amethyst. That's my birthstone. My favorite color is purple.
Well, do you believe that the colors of the Living Legacy Awards is purple, black, and gold? That's the color of the colors for the Living Legacy Award. That's the colors. So your color is our favorite color. It's our favorite color, too. It's going to be a mess. What does purple say about you? What does the color say about you?
Well, it's my birthstone one. That's the most important thing. But purple to me represents, it's not real loud. It's a color that is noticeable, but it's soft. just like myself. I'm a very reserved, laid-back person. And when you see me, I'll be sitting away, and I'm more laid-back, and I'm just observing. And purple to me is just a calm, soft color.
One meal for the rest of your life, what would that meal be?
Bacon. Bacon and
eggs.
I
love bacon. Bacon and eggs. What do you like
bacon.
About bacon? What do you like about bacon?
I guess it's just the flavor. It's the flavor. I don't know what. You put bacon on anything, and it tastes much better.
Excellent, excellent. What is the biggest pet peeve of yours?
I like a nice house. If you have ever gone to the places I've lived in, I'm not going to say I'm a tier decorator, but I like decorating my house.
Oh, fantastic. So you love interior decorating. You take pride in your home. You are truly a woman of substance. You have all the clues when it comes to being a woman. You don't take things lightly. What was your favorite subject in school?
Good question. My favorite subject in school.
No, not math.
I thought I'm an accountant. It wasn't math. I have to get back with you on that because I had
a
couple.
If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who would that be?
Coffee with any historical figure probably would be Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama, what do you like about Michelle Obama that you want to have sit down and have a cup of coffee with her? What intrigued you to want to sit down with Michelle Obama and have a cup of coffee? What is it about her?
Because she's a lady of class. She knows how to deliver her message. She knows how to express herself in dress because I love well-dressed women and men. And she managed to make the most powerful man marry the first black president to make this man powerful, which made her powerful. Just her class.
Excellent, excellent lady. Excellent lady, excellent choice to sit down and have coffee with. That's somebody that I know you would enjoy speaking with. She would love to talk to you because you have the same type of aura that she has. You are a lady, you're class, you're giving, you're loving, you're warm. You do things that basically affect people's lives. And you have truly Be There Magazine, the publisher, myself. Everything about you has impacted what we do, and I want to thank you for doing it. And you do what you do like no other has done it. You really have found a niche for yourself, a big niche for yourself. And I want to commend you for doing it. Where can the listeners find you online, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram? Give us your information on how to get in touch with you.
My Facebook page is Williams LaJuan. First name Williams, last name is LaJuan. My Instagram page is the same, Williams LaJuan.
William LaJuan. Now, is William your first name or your last name?
Williams is my married name. LaJuan is my first name.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. This has been one interesting putting your eyelids open. I know you don't have a lot of time. Give us your closing statements.
Well, my ending remarks. And I'm glad you asked that question. I do have something written down, very short. My message to all my followers, supporters, and family and friends, You would never fail if you put the work in. You would never fail. Put others first, then yourself. You would never fail. Be a giver rather than a taker. Thank you.
A way to end this awesome documentary podcast. Be a giver, not a taker. If anyone has gotten anything about the words that you have uttered out of your mouth, that was the last profound statement. If people could learn and just not only learn, but to participate and actuate those words that you said. If they could get up in the morning and said to themselves, I'm going to be a giver, not a taker. I'm going to give something to someone today that will improve their life along the way. But I'm not going to get up and take something from someone today. I want to meet someone today. Giving is always more blessings, more actuating of happiness than taking and taking and taking. And people who take seem to really don't understand life and what's at stake. So for you to utter those words again, Candy, thank you, thank you, thank you. See you on the 24th of February. Be There Magazine Living Legacy Awards Gala. It's going to be a big one. Tell Lottie, Dottie, everybody, Luke, Blue, and the whole crew. Candy will be in the center of this event as one of the sponsors. She also will have a page in the magazine. She's a patron. She's everything that Be There Magazine needs to continue to be successful. Again, get in touch with her on Facebook and make sure you come and see her at the event. Have her autograph your magazine at her page. Have her autograph the magazine for you and do things that's positive. And like she said, be a giver, not a taker. My name is Russell Price. I'm the publisher of Be There Magazine. I give it to you straight talk, no chaser. Every morning we give you the documentary podcast. See you tomorrow morning.